You're listening to the Franchise Freedom Podcast with Giuseppe Grammatico.
Welcome to the Franchise Freedom Podcast. I'm your host, Giuseppe Grammatico, your franchise guide. And today we have a very special guest. Today we're speaking with John Warner. John is the CEO of Silver Moonshots and works with startup business founders and early stage company CEO management teams to help them set clear growth oriented goals and to get the best possible outcomes. John serves on several advisory boards and chairs three of them and speaks regularly about the role of technology and innovation in the healthcare and aging 50 plus space. John is also the author of his 40th book, if I read that correctly, Slam, to guide entrepreneurs. John, welcome to the Franchise Freedom Podcast.
Great to be here, Giuseppe.
And we were just talking, 40th book. That's pretty impressive. Did I read 40th book correctly?
Yeah, that was number 40. For many years I was writing two a year, would you believe? And I just got into the discipline of writing. I blog a lot, I publish a lot, and I've always found it came easy to me. So the quality may be questionable, but the quantity is certainly there.
Awesome. That's great. I just wrote my first one and thought about maybe down the road looking at a second. So when I read 40, I said, wow. So I may hit you up for some advice in the very near future as I start book number two.
Just keep at it. Write every day, Giuseppe. That's the big advice, right? Right. People get scared of the blank page. Just don't do it. Just get into the discipline of writing. That's the big advice.
Yeah. And speaking of which, we took, with the podcast, we started transcribing some episodes and kind of, getting them organized and put together. So that was a quick little secret that I learned along the way as well. Got a lot down, a big chunk of the book down in four or five mini interviews as we put them. And it's funny, you write the first book, everything is down, and then you realize, oh, I should have added that, or maybe I should have mentioned that. So I already have ideas for what was missing in book one for book two.
So. and people crowdsource input these days. If you get the structure of your book right, you can actually put it out into the world these days, and people will weigh in, and sometimes with some quite good ideas that you can also write about. So there are a lot of good tips and tricks these days in terms of getting a book out there.
That's great. I was not aware of that, and I definitely will. We'll be having a second conversation before I start that process. So John, if you could fill us in, I like to start every episode. We always talk about our audience. Our audience are a lot of corporate executives. Sometimes we call them corporate refugees. People looking to make that leap into entrepreneurship, whether it be a franchise, a non-franchise business, and looking for advice, what they should be doing, questions they should be asking, and we also have our audience are current franchisees, current business owners that have made that leap, and they are looking kind of for the next investment, next vehicle, ways to diversify not only their investments, but they're also looking at a potential exit strategy. So that is kind of the audience. So if you can fill the audience a little bit on your background, how did you get started in your current business, and what does the journey look like?
Sure, happy to do that. So I was one of those corporate refugees, if I go back far enough. I worked for Air Products and Chemicals, a pretty major corporation up in Pennsylvania. I worked for Exxon Mobil for many years. And I was climbing the corporate ladder, but got pretty disillusioned in doing that. So at the tender age of 35, I decided I'd had enough of corporate life and wanted to go out on my own. I always had some entrepreneurial ambitions. And I started a consulting business early on as a small business and just literally tried to take that to marketplace, learn from my mistakes in doing it, but realized I needed to kind of retool, relearn what was needed, because working in a small business is very different. I was super naive about what it took to succeed. You have to wear many hats. You have to take on things like the sales function and really understand the finances of the business, et cetera. So that was a learning curve. It ultimately succeeded. I grew that business to about 30 people before selling it. And then I got the bug for being in small business. So I went on to have two more startups of my own that I founded and sold. And then from there went on to kind of parlay my experience, because I'd had three startup organizations. It's when my writing career started. So I started both writing and teaching entrepreneurship in general to those very people who wanted to come in the space, into the space, and try and give them some of the toolkit that they needed to succeed, and maybe not experience the mistakes that I had. So that was kind of the journey. These days, I do a lot of board advisory to early stage companies, just trying to guide them. And that's particularly when they need to raise capital if they're in a full startup. But equally, I spend time with individuals who aren't ready for that full step into a startup of their own. They might just be looking to license an idea and just go through the ideation process, and they still need to engage in good product thinking, good customer discovery, thinking about who the markets might be and the targets. So there's a lot of entrepreneurial thinking in that. And the same goes for franchising. I don't think anyone should just jump into franchising, you know, with both feet. I think there's some research to be done in preparing for that step. So I spend most of my time these days trying to help people think through that journey.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, obviously, definitely have a passion for entrepreneurship, you know, both what you just said and prior to the show today. So before we get into the kind of the business, how you help current businesses and startups and things like that, if we take a step back. So prior to the show, we had a little conversation about career transition, and there's a lot going on in the world, right? With the pandemic, with people either they have, you know, always thought about maybe starting some type of business, and it's kind of been on the back of their mind. Other people have been kind of forced into trying to figure out what's next as they have been furloughed and or maybe have been downsized, you know, from their job. So, what advice, you know, you've been doing this for a while. What advice would you give someone going through a career transition, trying to figure out if business ownership is the right fit? Because, you know, quite frankly, you own multiple businesses. I have as well. It's not easy, right? Whether it's a franchise, whether you're going the license route, whether it's neither, you know, just a startup on your own. This is not easy. It requires a lot of work. You know, what advice would you give, a couple pieces of advice for that person looking to make the transition?
Sure. So the biggest advice, I think, and the one you want to dive into the most, is really doing as much research as you possibly can about the journey ahead. I think, as you alluded to, I think sometimes people get into small business by accident, and it's the accident of maybe being furloughed, but, you know, more often than not, you know, perhaps they collect a redundancy package, or they suddenly find themselves out of a job and think, well, maybe I can make more money, or maybe I can, you know, life would be easier if I were in charge of my own destiny. And there's nothing wrong with that as a thought, but I think you've got to really think that through. So how do you do that? You've just got to pay attention to others who've done it. So I think it's great to actually talk to small business owners, franchise owners, people who license products, and indeed even entrepreneurs. These days, you can read about it. You can web search about it. You can listen to podcasts such as yours and many others that are out there these days. We know the podcast industry has exploded. There is some absolutely fabulous advice available, you know, these days in many quarters. You can watch people talk about particular topics. So for me, I think the foundation is almost going back to school. It's getting back into a learning mindset that says, I shouldn't naively jump into this and think I can be successful on day one. I need to kind of train my mind and you know, get filled up, if you like, with as much good knowledge as I can possibly muster before I make that choice to go into something. So that would be the first thing. Go deep dive on the learning side, pay attention, you know, take as much time as you need. It's certainly weeks, if not months. And then secondly, I think you've got to make sure you're leaping in the right direction. You know, it's fairly old advice, but it's good advice. People should sort of do things that they're passionate about and they care about. So you've got to think about what would make you happy when you've done it. There's nothing worse than jumping into a business, and it doesn't matter what it is, and you suddenly find 6 months later, you know, I really don't care about this product, these customers. This is not my passion. You'll find your motivation just dissipates super quickly, and you'll find yourself in the wrong place. So I think you've got to research what would I enjoy doing, and again, prepare for that step. So I think those are the two things, a lot of research ahead of time, and then make sure you've kind of aligned your values and your passions with what it is you want to try and do.
Right. I absolutely agree. And, you know, have that vision, you know, why, you know, kind of talking about, you know, interest and things like that, but why are we doing this in the first place? Do all the homework as you had mentioned. And part of that homework too is, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me, and I am guilty of this as well, we go online and we just start doing research and reading articles, and it's knowledge overload. I always jokingly say knowledge is not power. It's how you apply that knowledge, right? So we're all filled with knowledge. We all know the workouts to do, but are we doing the workout? You know, you kind of need that coach to assist you. So, you know, really just in my opinion, you know, some of the advice, I wish it was advice given to me. I actually kind of figured this out the hard way, and it took me a lot of time, but I got off the internet and just, you know, in my franchise journey, when I was looking at franchising, I just started picking up the phone or visiting franchisees at their stores and just saying, hey, I'm looking Absolutely. At opening up that franchise. What are your thoughts? Would you, the $1 million question, would you, knowing what you know now, would you do it all over again? And having conversations with people, I think people have seemed to shy away from that, John. It seems to me they just like, yeah, I'll do some research online. I'll read a brochure. I'll look at a webinar. But just really having that dialogue one-on-one, sometimes, especially in person, sometimes goes a long way. You get some honest answers. Maybe someone will shy away if you're asking for advice in a group. But if it's one-on-one with an owner, you'll definitely get some honest feedback. I think some really good honest feedback.
I agree, and let's talk about it, because I think it's the way to de-risk what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't agree more. I think face-to-face conversations are ideal, and even in COVID, when they can't be face-to-face, it's so easy to get on Zoom now and meet someone. Right. And I agree. I don't think people are too resistant. Most people like talking about themselves. So if you ring someone up and say, "Hey, can you tell me about your business? And can you tell me what you like and you don't like?" I think people are pretty disclosing. And this is all in service of something that the Lean Startup Movement called customer discovery. We didn't even port customer discovery 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's not the same as market research. Market research is a formal affair. You know, you send out the MailChimp questionnaire and you ask people a bunch of questions with drop-down menus. That's fine, but that's usually at the product level. And you're picking whether it's, you know, blue or yellow. Customer discovery is getting face to face to people and trying to get into their shoes, understand how they kind of live their life, their pains, their gains, and all the things that you need to know ahead of time. I think that is the beginning of all startup journeys. It's the rigor of getting deeply into customer discovery. And it's not you pushing an agenda on someone. It's not thinking, I've got an idea, can I kind of pre-sell it to you? I think I'd be a really good startup person doing this. You're really in listening mode, and that's the big difference. You're there making sure that you're getting good information, even if it invalidates what you're thinking. So if you're right. thinking, wow, this franchise or this business would be really great, and they, you know, the feedback you get is, well, no, it wouldn't. I think it's saturated. I think there's too many competitors here. I think the prices are all wrong. That's a great way of finding out that it may not be for you and you should switch or pivot, right. as people like to say these days, into something else. So I think it's crucial to do as much customer discovery as you can, as early as you can.
Yes, I agree. We call it validation calls on the franchising side, and that is crucial. You know, obviously, franchise development person will give you all the answers you need and all the information, but you want to hear it directly from the people doing the work and running the business day in, day out. And one additional, and just to kind of one last piece of advice that I learned the hard way with validation. I know specifically when you're even looking at a franchise business, don't just call people in your backyard. That's the mistake I made. Call people. I'm in New Jersey. Call people. John Bayou, got in your offices in California, Florida. You name it. Call them all over, and people say why. And I found this out. And without naming names and without, you know, embarrassing anyone or any specific company, the original franchise I had looked at, thought was a perfect fit. And the franchise owners I spoke with did not give me the best feedback. And for years, I couldn't figure it out. You know, they didn't give me the best feedback. I just, it didn't leave a bad, you know, left a bad taste in my mouth. So I ended up doing other things and was happy, did well, and you know, not looking back. But as far as the advice I give to future franchise owners, I found out the advice that was given to me was actually biased and false, because you know, I was looking at a open territory, and by developing in that open territory, the existing franchisees felt I was going to infringe on their business, because that open territory, which was a few counties here in New Jersey, were wide open. And since there was not anyone developing, they were able to kind of go in and pick up an account here and there. So I found this out years and years afterwards. And by the way, I'm not saying, you know, this will happen, or this is what goes on in franchising. It just was a specific instance that happened to me. I wish I was prepared for that. I was not. So I learned it the hard way. So it's my free advice that I kind of give to everyone. So
I agree with you entirely. I think you cast a broad net. You make sure you're not too parochial, that you get corroborative kind of input. I also think there's one other little wrinkle that I can add if I can, which is be careful that you're not leading the witness. I think a lot of people engage in that, what you call validation, I call customer discovery, with a kind of a mindset that says, I'm here to prove that I'm right. And the problem with that, if you have that conversation with that mindset, you're really getting people to say yes to things they might not say yes to if you ask them a different way. So we know that leading a witness is something you do in the court. You know, you say, you know, were you there on the night of Tuesday the 16th? And you're going to get a yes or no answer out of that, or you're going to, you know, you're trying to go and push them in a certain direction. You really want to go and ask open questions. So you're more about an investigator. You know, you're just someone who's there like a detective in a story. Let's say you're talking to a franchise owner. You really want to go and say to them, tell me about your business. Tell me what keeps you up at night. Tell me what's good. Tell me what's bad. Tell me what you would have done differently if you were to tell your younger self 5 years ago some good advice. Those sort of questions are likely to reveal more about the good, the bad, and the indifferent than going there saying, you know, how great is it to be the franchise manager of a Dunkin' Donuts? I mean, you know, in the end, you've just led them down a path, and then what are you getting out of that? So I think you've got to be careful how you think about this.
Right. Absolutely. Right. Yeah. Don't set them up to get the answers you want. Absolutely. That's sabotage there. And at that point, there's no point in even doing the meeting or the interview.
Agreed.
You want to keep them motivated.
I've seen people, I actually coach people in asking questions. It's amazing how much they do set people up for the answer that they want.
Yeah.
And they show their research and pretend that they've got 10 people saying this is great. They just ask the questions in the wrong way.
Yeah. And by the way, and one last thing on that, with the question that I said, the $1 million question, knowing what you know now, would you do this all over again? That is, you know, that's not an open-end question unless they elaborate. If they say no, and you're like, oh, that's not good. Well, find that. If they say no, you know, for example, going back to Dunkin' Donuts, I wouldn't do it all over again. Why? Well, because, you know, maybe it's their specific market or their role, which I hear is not matching with what they wanted to do. You know, they envision just having this grand business and just kind of overseeing it. And now they're a manager and they're dealing with HR all day long. Find out, because it may just be a specific mismatch for that specific owner. So always have them elaborate and ask why. I always say ask why 5 times to get really deep in your answer.
Just like a little kid, right? When mom tells you you can't go out to play, you got to keep asking that why question. So, you know, maybe people are not that comfortable doing it. I think the other great question is tell me more. So if someone says something, you don't have to go and tee up the next question that's on your pad. You can just say, can you tell me more about that? People will disclose. It's amazing if you practice this. And practice on your family. Practice on people you know. And then you'll find it reveals so much great information.
Right. No, absolutely. I definitely agree there. Yeah, no, it was great conversation. You know, there's definitely, so kind of to sum up, definitely want to do some thorough investigation in any business, figure out why you want to do it, as John and I were speaking about. There's different paths. No path is better than the other. It's the path that definitely matches what you're looking for. So John, talk to us a little bit about, you know, startups, companies that either are, I guess, you know, starting up their businesses or existing businesses. How do you help businesses? You know, what specifically do you do? You know, do you only work with certain size businesses, types of businesses? Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Well, we all get a little bit typecast as we get older, and that's true of me as well. So I teach entrepreneurship, so I see a lot of would-be entrepreneurs from many sectors. But I have to say the vast majority of these days are in the healthcare sector. So it's people that are trying to serve that sector in a multitude of different ways because it's a very big sector. Healthcare is not really an industry. It's about 125 separate sub-industries. It's 20% of our GDP, so it's a giant sector. And then within that, I actually like startups that are trying to solve for problems in the older adult space, which for me is people who are over the age of 50. And that's because they've got a ton of unmet needs. There's a lot of people in the 50-plus marketplace that are looking for products and services that are just not yet there yet. So the opportunities to bring those products into being are massive. So I that's who I most like to help in terms of the mix. In terms of how I'm going to appropriate your word, I think there's two things I mainly do. One is help them with the validation journey. You know, do you have a path that's clear, that's solving for a real need in the marketplace? Even if you're evaluating something, you know, does this particular franchise in this location at this time look like a good idea? You know, or as opposed to a complete brand new startup, that's a journey. You have to dig into that, do the data, do that customer discovery we talked about, have a value proposition that, you know, is really compelling and is different to everybody else out there. That's going to win ultimately. And then if and only if they can get that validation to the right place, I help them then with the execution journey, because that journey is the hard work journey. It's the sweat journey where they have to really understand how to execute on the plan, which usually means good leadership, putting a good team together, making sure finances are in place and then well controlled when they are, good marketing systems. So execution's a pathway all by itself, but it needs to sit on the bedrock of a really well-validated idea and a clear value proposition. So that's where I help the most, trying to help those organizations, whoever they may be, do those two things.
Right. That's great. You know, with your business, as you're working with you know, different types of business, what's exciting? I mean, there's a lot going on in the world, but what's exciting? What's new? Anything you want to tell the audience about?
Yeah, so let me give you some context. So what I do in Silver Moonshots that you mentioned earlier is we run this nonprofit accelerator. I run it as a nonprofit because I want to increase the deal flow of people who are coming into entrepreneurship and coming up with new ideas. So we bring six companies into the cohort every quarter. So every 3 months we have six new companies. We run a little six-week curriculum. And they do a whole bunch of customer discovery in that six-week period. We've been doing this for nearly 2 years now. It's a lot of fun because they're out there testing their ideas and talking to customers and really validating what they're doing. I get super excited because, as I mentioned, a lot of these companies are aiming at the older adult marketplace. So they're talking to people about a range of ideas. And they might be really top of mind stuff that we're all concerned about now. So it's people protecting themselves with PPE. It might be around COVID in general, how to be safe. It might be about markets like the cannabis market, which in California has completely exploded since we deregulated that marketplace. So it might be CBD, for example, for older adults. And how can we supply products to market in a different way that are more fit for purpose, et cetera, et cetera. So I get excited with a lot of startups that are trying to bring new thinking to bear, and it invigorates me. So I see all sorts of wonderful opportunities, all of which are enabled by amazing technology now, just the advances we've seen in terms of digital platforms and what we can do on the back of a smartphone now, or artificial intelligence and algorithms that can get chatbots to market, for example, just give us so many opportunities that weren't there even 10 or 15 years ago. So it's a very exciting time.
Yeah, it's great. Wow. That's very interesting. And I was checking that out on the website. John, if someone wanted to reach out, so they're not certain what direction to move in, needs some advice, you want to maybe see if they're a good fit, good candidate to work with, what's the best way that they can reach out to you?
Yeah, there's two ways. If your focus is on the older adult marketplace in general, then go to the silvermoonshots.org website. There's a contact form there, and there's actually some material. There's some free materials on there to go and look what others have done, previous cohorts we've run, etc. And that will come to me. I see all of that traffic as it relates to that website. And then in terms of, you know, the validation framework stuff that I do entrepreneurially, I have a website dedicated to my last book. It's called slamprocess.com. That website also has a contact page on it and has a ton of free resources. There's some video resources on it. Actually, the validation map is right there in resources within that website. That's probably worth people looking at. You can reach me through that. And then, of course, through all the usual social media links. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm John C. Warner on LinkedIn. John has got no H. It's just J-O-N. But you can find me and reach out, message me. I'm more than happy to talk to people.
Sounds great. Anything else you'd want to... And by the way, that's all going to be in the show notes. Anything else that we didn't cover today? I feel like we could be talking here for a few hours.
Good conversation. You know, the one thing I'd leave your listeners with, just as a thought, is I think entrepreneurs are heroes. And when I say entrepreneurs, I mean anybody who's ideating, just coming up with new ideas, new thinking, individuals that take on small businesses and franchise, and people who start businesses from scratch. They're all heroes. We need more of them. You know, do your research, as I said, because this is not an easy journey. So do your research, do it carefully, do your customer discovery. But take the leap if you think that you're getting good feedback. It's wonderfully rewarding. You do take control of your own life. So if it is on that bedrock of good research, it can be a very rewarding journey. But they're brave people who do it, and I applaud all of them.
Yeah, it's not easy, but from experience, and I'm sure we both agree, as we discussed earlier, definitely worth it. If it's, you know, for me, was all about the time freedom. It wasn't, you know, money is nice, but just being able to spend time with family and not
being
be on
your
the
own
road.
Boss, yeah. And that's yeah. Right. And choosing how you spend your time. I think those things are super rewarding.
Right. Do your homework. I know it sounds scary, dangerous, risky, but I feel doing your homework, working with someone like John or myself, getting a little bit of more of insight, making sure that the questions are getting answered for you. And I think that information and applying it definitely de-risks the whole project. You know, you start to get a little bit more educated and informed on the business, and you're like, okay, well, for example, I know I need to bring in X amount of customers every month to break even. I can easily do that. So I thought it was a much greater number. So I think once you break it down a little bit, it definitely helps with the overwhelm and what the implied risk.
And it's a good way to think about it. I always say, if you're B2C, you have to ask yourself the question, what would it take to get my first 100 customers? Mm-hmm. And can I do that? And if you're B2B, what would it take to get my first 10 customers? I think they're not a bad rule of thumb to think about as part of your research.
Right. Because before that, once you don't have a plan, you're just looking at numbers, it gets to just be intimidating to be quite honest. And once you have a plan and break it down, you can make that educated decision. But
that's right.
John, it was great to have you on the show. We include, as I mentioned, everything. So all your contact websites, everything will be on the show notes. And wanted to thank you again for being on the show.
Great stuff, Giuseppe. It's been good talking.
Thanks for tuning in. Whenever you're ready, here are three ways Giuseppe can help. 1, if you've ever considered owning a business of any kind, you owe it to yourself to get a copy of Giuseppe's book, Franchise Freedom. Download your free copy at ggthefranchiseguide.com/book. 2, want to understand how successful executives make the transition from corporate to owning their own franchise? Join Giuseppe's next online presentation, Franchise Freedom: How to Escape the Corporate World and Have Financial and Time Freedom by Owning a Franchise, by going to ggthefranchiseguide.com/video. 3, want to work with Giuseppe one-on-one to identify the right franchise opportunity for you, to navigate the process, and get plugged into experienced franchising advisors? Send him an email to gg@ggthefranchiseguide.com with one-on-one in the subject, and he'll send you all the details.